Imagine making a life-or-death decision based on incomplete information. In 1983, Soviet Lieutenant Colonel Stanislav Petrov faced exactly this scenario when radar systems indicated 5 American nuclear missiles heading toward Russia. Protocol demanded immediate reporting to trigger a counterattack, but something felt wrong. Trusting his instinct that the alert was a false alarm, Petrov held back, a decision that likely prevented nuclear war when the missiles turned out to be merely sunlight reflecting off clouds. This capacity to evaluate our own thinking, metacognition, stands as one of humanity's most powerful yet underappreciated cognitive abilities. Know Thyself by neuroscientist Stephen Fleming has become a surprise bestseller, praised by figures from Bill Gates to Daniel Kahneman. The book's popularity reflects our growing fascination with understanding how our minds work in an increasingly complex world. Fleming's research at University College London's Wellcome Centre for Human Neuroimaging has revolutionized how we understand self-awareness, transforming what philosophers once considered inaccessible to science into a rigorous field of study. Through his accessible exploration of the neuroscience behind self-reflection, Fleming shows us not just how our brains monitor themselves, but why this capacity matters for everything from education to artificial intelligence. Our brains are prediction machines locked inside our skulls with only limited sensory information about the outside world. Like blind men examining different parts of an elephant, our senses provide only noisy slices of reality that must be combined to make best guesses about what exists. This creates what scientists call inverse problems, determining what's really out there based on incomplete information. Consider how we can recognize a friend's face despite variations in lighting, angle, and distance, or how we can understand speech in a noisy restaurant. These are complex inverse problems our brains solve constantly. The visual system solves these problems through a hierarchical organization. Early regions, V1, V2, process basic features like line orientation, while later regions handle color and movement. Area MT specializes in motion detection, while the fusiform face area recognizes faces. Crucially, information doesn't just flow forward through this hierarchy. Abundant feedback connections create constant loops of neural activity, allowing higher brain levels to provide contextual information about what we might encounter. This explains why we can quickly spot a snake-like shape in grass. Our brains are primed by evolutionary experience to detect potential threats. This predictive processing architecture combines prior beliefs with sensory data in proportion to our uncertainty about each. Think of it like pouring cake batter, sensory data, into a mold, prior assumptions. When sensory information is clear, it dominates our perception. When ambiguous, prior expectations fill in the gaps. This explains phenomena like ventriloquism, where visual cues override auditory location because vision typically provides more precise spatial information. Similarly, the McGurk effect demonstrates how visual information about lip movements can alter what we hear, showing how the brain weighs and combines different sources of sensory information. The brain's uncertainty tracking machinery serves a dual purpose. It helps us perceive the world and grants us metacognition as a side benefit. When uncertainty is high, we naturally doubt our decisions. This form of metacognition appears widespread across species. Experiments show bottlenose dolphins will decline difficult sound discrimination tasks, macaque monkeys make strategic bets based on decision confidence, and even rats demonstrate awareness of uncertainty about odor mixtures. Recent studies have shown that bees can also express uncertainty by opting out of difficult decisions about flower patterns, suggesting this is an evolutionarily ancient mechanism. While uncertainty tracking provides rudimentary metacognition seen in animals and babies, it's merely the beginning of self-awareness. The ability to doubt our senses represents just the first building block of metacognition. We still need mechanisms to monitor our actions. This basic uncertainty awareness evolves into more sophisticated forms of self-reflection in humans, enabling us to question not just our perceptions, but also our thoughts, beliefs, and decision-making processes. This layered architecture of uncertainty processing helps explain how simple sensory doubt can develop into full-fledged self-awareness. Self-awareness requires recognizing when our actions don't match our intentions. Our brains employ sophisticated algorithms to monitor performance across all scales, from minute motor adjustments like maintaining balance while walking, to complex evaluations of long-term goals and career trajectories. This monitoring system operates through hierarchical control, with higher brain regions creating general plans while lower areas implement granular details, similar to how a corporate structure functions with executives setting strategy and workers handling day-to-day operations. The prefrontal cortex sits atop both perceptual and motor hierarchies, translating perceptions into actions through a complex network of neural pathways. This organization means we don't consciously control individual muscles when reaching for coffee. Higher level intentions coordinate unconscious motor sequences through a cascade of neural signals. Concert pianists exemplify this relationship, with conscious decisions about tempo and emphasis while fingers automatically hit the right keys through years of practiced motor memory. As Vladimir Horowitz famously said, "I am a general. My soldiers are the keys." This metaphor perfectly captures how high-level intentions orchestrate complex behaviors without micromanaging every detail. Our brains constantly make unconscious adjustments to keep actions on track through a sophisticated feedback system. The broken escalator phenomenon reveals these automatic corrections. We stumble on stationary escalators because our bodies prepare for movement without conscious awareness, demonstrating how deeply ingrained these motor predictions are. The cerebellum, containing 80% of our neurons in beautifully organized circuits, plays a crucial role by generating expected sensory consequences of actions and comparing them with actual feedback. This little brain processes information at an astounding rate of 40 million nerve impulses per second. This forward model architecture predicts consequences of actions and tracks discrepancies with remarkable precision. The system filters out expected sensory feedback, which explains why you can't tickle yourself. Your brain predicts the sensation and reduces its impact through a process called sensory attenuation. It also explains why punches feel stronger to recipients than throwers, potentially escalating conflicts through mismatched perceptions of force. This same mechanism helps us distinguish between self-generated movements and external forces acting upon us. The brain's ability to monitor itself relies on sophisticated error detection mechanisms that operate faster than conscious awareness, sometimes as quickly as 50 to 100 milliseconds. Patrick Rabbit's groundbreaking 1960s experiments showed people could detect their own errors 40 milliseconds faster than they could respond to external stimuli, revealing an unconscious error monitoring system. These error signals, generated by the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex, function as prediction errors that track discrepancies between expected and actual outcomes, helping us learn from mistakes and adjust future behaviors. This system is so efficient that it often triggers corrective actions before we're consciously aware of the error, demonstrating the remarkable sophistication of our neuro-error detection mechanisms. Human self-awareness may have evolved from our need to understand others' minds. Between 70,000 and 50,000 years ago, archaeological evidence shows increasing human concern with social perception. Jewelry appeared and cave art emerged across continents, suggesting appreciation for how creations influenced other minds. Oxford philosopher Gilbert Ryle proposed that self-reflection developed by applying our mind-reading tools inward. The sorts of things that I can find out about myself are the same as the sorts of things that I can find out about other people. This theory suggests we became self-aware by repurposing cognitive machinery originally evolved for understanding others. Mind reading is fundamentally recursive. We think about what others think about what we think. While adults find this effortless, children develop this ability gradually. Before age 4, children typically fail false belief tests, unable to understand that someone might look for an object where they think it is rather than where it actually is. Importantly, metacognition develops on a similar timeline. Three-year-olds show poor awareness of their memory accuracy, while four- and five-year-olds can reliably distinguish between their correct and incorrect answers. What makes human brains capable of such sophisticated self-awareness? Comparing brains across species provides clues. Primates pack neurons more efficiently than other mammals. While a cow and chimpanzee might have similar brain weights, the chimp has roughly twice the neurons. What makes human brains special is simply that we are primates with exceptionally large heads. Human brains have more processing power devoted to higher-order functions like self-awareness. Our association cortex, particularly prefrontal cortex, is especially well-developed, with an extra granular layer not found in rodents. Brain imaging studies consistently show that thinking about ourselves activates the medial prefrontal cortex and medial parietal cortex, the same regions that activate when thinking about others. While many animals have precursors for self-awareness, what makes human self-awareness exceptional is our expanded neural real estate in the association cortex combined with language, creating a computational platform for deep recursive models of ourselves. Individual differences in metacognition can be measured scientifically by comparing confidence judgments with actual performance. Despite people generally showing overconfidence bias, with most rating themselves above average in various skills, 94% of professors rate their teaching as above average, 80% of drivers consider themselves above average, and 70% of students rate their leadership skills as superior, they still maintain sensitivity to fluctuations in their performance, recognizing when they've made mistakes. This better-than-average effect persists across cultures and professions, though its magnitude varies. Metacognition is trait-like, forming a personal fingerprint that remains stable over time, much like personality traits. Research shows that mental health dimensions significantly affect metacognition. Anxious people show lower confidence but heightened metacognitive sensitivity, detecting subtle errors others might miss. Conversely, compulsive individuals display higher confidence but reduced sensitivity to mistakes. Depression tends to create accurate but pessimistic self-assessments, while mania leads to inflated self-evaluation. Intriguingly, IQ correlates strongly with task performance but not metacognitive ability, suggesting intelligence and self-awareness rely on distinct neurocircuits, a finding supported by brain imaging studies. Metacognition emerges from the uppermost levels of the prefrontal hierarchy, which integrates diverse inputs through a wide-angle lens. This abstract system combines uncertainty estimates from our sensory systems with information about our actions, emotions, and memories. Laboratory evidence confirms this integration. Transcranial magnetic stimulation of action planning circuits alters perceptual confidence without changing perception itself. Studies using EEG have identified specific neurosignatures that predict confidence ratings seconds before decisions are made. Our bodily states profoundly influence confidence. Briefly flashed disgusted faces or emotionally evocative smells subtly modulate our metacognitive judgments. Even subtle environmental cues like room temperature, background noise, or time pressure can affect our self-assessment abilities. This global pooling of information creates a flexible self-awareness system that transcends specific tasks, with studies showing correlated metacognitive abilities across unrelated domains like memory, perception, and motor skills. Research has found that meditation and mindfulness practices can enhance this cross-domain metacognitive ability. Failures of self-awareness are strikingly evident in disorders affecting the brain. Neurologists call this anosognosia, absence of knowing, while psychiatrists refer to lack of insight. Patient LM, a 67-year-old woman who suffered a stroke, exemplifies this phenomenon. Despite being paralyzed on her left side, she insisted she could move normally, even demonstrating clapping by waving only her functional right hand. Similar cases include patients with Anton syndrome who are cortically blind yet claim they can see, and individuals with Korsakoff syndrome who confabulate memories while being unaware of their memory impairment. This disconnect occurs because brain damage affects the very mechanisms needed for metacognition, highlighting how self-awareness depends on specific neural circuits rather than being a unified, singular ability. Many widely held beliefs about learning are actually metacognitive illusions. The popular notion of learning styles, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, lacks scientific evidence. Studies show no link between preferred style and performance. This myth persists because our metacognition creates false confidence. Pictorial learners feel more confident learning from pictures, though they don't actually perform better. Similarly, students feel more confident reading digital text versus print, leading them to study less and perform worse. Effective learning often contradicts our intuitions. Spaced practice outperforms cramming, and self-testing beats passive rereading, though both feel less fluent and comfortable. Our metacognitive beliefs about optimal learning strategies frequently mislead us toward ineffective approaches that merely feel productive. Effective learning requires making informed decisions about what to study. The discrepancy reduction theory suggests we study until our self-assessed knowledge matches our target level. Janet Metcalf's region of proximal learning model refines this by noting we learn best from material of intermediate difficulty, like weightlifting with challenging but manageable weights. Studies show academically successful students engage in more metacognitive thinking while studying. Interventions that boost metacognition, like prompting students to reflect on exam formats and study resources, improved performance by 1/3 of a letter grade while reducing anxiety. Some researchers even advocate for desirable difficulty through tools like the Sans Forgetica font, which reduces reading fluency to encourage deeper concentration. Teaching others powerfully enhances our own learning by engaging our metacognitive abilities. Children as young as 5 demonstrate an understanding of what knowledge needs to be taught versus what can be discovered independently. Studies show undergraduates perform better when told they'll teach material to others, and even brief advice-giving exercises for younger students improved grades throughout the school year. Teaching helps us avoid metacognitive illusions, like the illusion of explanatory depth, thinking we understand something until we try explaining it. Laboratory experiments reveal how our brains handle new information that might change our minds. Using Bayesian principles, researchers found that the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex tracks how much we should update our beliefs based on new evidence. Not simply detecting errors, but calculating belief adjustments. Our confidence acts as a mold-flexible rubber, low confidence, conforms to new data, while hard plastic, high confidence, maintains its shape. Problems arise when confidence becomes disconnected from accuracy, leading to poor decisions about incorporating new information. Experiments show that artificially heightened confidence reduces mind changing, and confirmation bias causes us to overweight evidence supporting existing views. Notably, highly confident people essentially ignore contradictory evidence, their brains barely process it. While perceptual decisions, identifying an apple versus an orange, have objectively correct answers, value-based decisions, preferring apples to oranges, reflect subjective preferences. Research shows people can have metacognition about these subjective choices too. When making value-based decisions between snacks, participants showed higher confidence when choosing items they were willing to pay more for. When participants had low confidence in initial choices, they were more likely to change their minds when encountering the same options again, ultimately making choices more aligned with their true preferences. Being willing to acknowledge low confidence often proves adaptive. By remaining open to change, we become receptive to new information that might contradict existing views. Good metacognition helps us change our minds when we're likely wrong, while remaining steadfast when we're right. Yet, despite the benefits of acknowledging uncertainty, many prefer decisiveness and confidence. Evolutionary simulations show overconfident individuals often succeed in competitive situations. You have to be in it to win it. Studies confirm that overconfident people achieve greater social status and influence even when less competent. Politicians who flip-flop are often punished by voters. The solution is strategic metacognition, maintaining private awareness of our limitations while selectively projecting confidence when needed. Brain imaging reveals this split architecture. Ventromedial PFC tracks private confidence based on decision difficulty, while lateral frontopolar cortex manages strategic confidence adjustments for social situations. When collaborating, confidence serves as currency for communicating belief strength. Consider hunters stalking prey. One whispers about movement seen to the left, the other disagrees but confidently points elsewhere. We naturally defer to the more confident observer. Laboratory studies confirm that two heads are better than one effect. When pairs view briefly flashed stimuli and must decide which contained a target, their joint decisions after disagreement are typically more accurate than those of the best individual working alone. This occurs because people intuitively communicate their confidence levels, allowing information to be weighted by reliability. Pairs who develop consistent confidence-sharing language show greater collective benefit. In courtrooms worldwide, metacognitive accuracy becomes critically important when witnesses testify about crimes. Unfortunately, eyewitness confidence often sways juries despite being unreliable. The Innocence Project estimates that mistaken identification contributed to approximately 70% of the 375-plus wrongful convictions later overturned by DNA evidence in the United States. Studies show eyewitness confidence influences juries more than testimony consistency or expert opinion. However, laboratory research reveals concerning metacognitive failures in eyewitness memory. In experiments, increasing brightness during the lineup phase decreased accuracy but increased confidence, a metacognitive illusion where people falsely believed better lighting improved their memory performance. When interacting with someone new, we typically assume their confidence reflects accuracy, a dangerous assumption given the variability in metacognitive abilities. In legal advising, verbal expressions of confidence create dangerous ambiguity. When surveying 250 lawyers about phrases like significant likelihood, responses ranged from below 25% to near 100% probability. Scientists face similar metacognitive challenges amid millions of annual publications. Stuart Feierstein argues that cultivating high-quality ignorance, knowing what remains unknown, is more valuable than accumulating facts. Science's replication crisis reveals this tension. Studies show only 39% of psychology textbook findings and 62% of high-profile science Nature studies could be reproduced. Our brains constantly construct narratives to explain our choices, even when these explanations are fiction. In a revealing study, participants enthusiastically justified preferring a jam they had actually rejected moments earlier when researchers secretly switched the samples. Only one-third detected the switch. This choice blindness extends to more significant domains like political beliefs. The neural machinery behind these self-narratives was illuminated through studies of split-brain patients. Michael Gazzaniga found that when information was shown only to the right hemisphere, the language-dominant left hemisphere would invent explanations for actions it hadn't initiated. Gazzaniga called this left hemisphere function the interpreter. Our sense of agency is often an illusion. A striking example is elevator closed door buttons that haven't functioned since the 1990s yet still create a feeling of control. Language supercharges our metacognition by enabling recursive thinking about ourselves, but this creates a potential disconnect between our self-narratives and reality. In our increasingly technological world, humans and machines form intimate partnerships. Modern neural networks can be classified inputs, but they lack true self-awareness of what they know or don't know. Knowledge remains in the system rather than for the system. They lack representational redescription that would allow them to know that they know. Creating meta-representations is relatively simple. We can build metacognitive networks that monitor how other networks operate. New approaches like Dropout run multiple copies of networks to gauge uncertainty, allowing introspective drones to predict and avoid crashes. These systems aren't conscious, but they possess critical building blocks for metacognition. What if we could augment machines with human self-awareness? Brain-computer interfaces might allow our neural machinery to monitor autonomous technology rather than just control it. Just as we naturally become aware when our physical movements go awry, we could develop a natural awareness of what our autonomous vehicles are doing. The relationship between metacognition and consciousness remains a subject of intense scientific debate. While basic consciousness might exist without reflection, as seen in animals and young infants, the distinctly human form of consciousness likely involves meta-awareness, our ability to think about our own thoughts. Dreams offer an especially fascinating test case. Most dreams lack self-awareness, occurring in a flow state where we accept bizarre events without question. However, in lucid dreams, we gain metacognitive awareness within the dream state, creating a fundamentally different quality of experience where we can observe and even direct our dream narrative. Advanced brain imaging techniques have revealed that lucid dreaming specifically activates the frontopolar cortex and precuneus, regions strongly implicated in metacognition and self-referential thinking. When researchers apply electrical stimulation to the prefrontal cortex, PFC, they can increase dream lucidity, suggesting that when people become conscious of their dreams, they recruit the same neural networks that support waking metacognition. This finding provides compelling evidence for the shared mechanisms between different forms of self-awareness. Enhancing self-awareness in daily life can create moments of clarity similar to becoming lucid in a dream, suddenly noticing patterns, habits, and assumptions that were previously invisible to us. Meditation has emerged as a powerful tool for developing metacognition, with controlled studies demonstrating that even 2 weeks of consistent meditation training increased metacognitive sensitivity during memory tests. The benefits extend beyond meditation. Research shows that simple reflection practices yield measurable results. For instance, employees who dedicated 15 minutes daily to reflecting on lessons learned outperformed control groups by 20% on final assessments, highlighting how brief periods of structured introspection can significantly improve performance. However, maintaining self-awareness faces unprecedented challenges in our modern environment. The constant pressure for efficiency, endless digital notifications, and information overload create conditions that actively work against metacognitive thinking. Social media algorithms designed to capture attention can further erode our capacity for deep reflection. By understanding these factors leading to self-awareness failure, we can develop targeted strategies to prevent the deterioration of metacognition. Regular digital sabotage, mindfulness practices, and dedicated reflection time become essential tools for protecting our metacognitive capabilities. The future presents both opportunities and challenges for self-knowledge. As we integrate more deeply with artificial intelligence and digital technologies, our metacognitive abilities will become increasingly crucial for maintaining our autonomy and authentic human experience. We must learn to navigate not only our own consciousness, but also our relationship with intelligent machines. Perhaps the greatest wisdom lies not just in accumulating knowledge, but in understanding the limits of what we know, and embracing the uncertainty and continuous learning that makes us uniquely human. This modern interpretation of the ancient Delphic maxim, "Know thyself," suggests that metacognition isn't just about self-understanding, but about maintaining our humanity in an increasingly automated world.